Welcome back to another edition of the What's Up ABQ podcast. You know, the arts are important here in Albuquerque and New Mexico. They're a very personal way to express yourself. Practically everyone has a preference in how they consume their medium of choice.
You know, I think we have this sort of sterile, really stereotypical way we think we have to digest and like eating our vegetables.
Right.
And it doesn't have to be that way,
right,
you know?
Today's guest talks with us about a different side of the arts, the way to make a living from the craft. She discusses with us how you can learn the business of being an artist and gives us a preview of the upcoming Arts Career Fair for all considering a livelihood in the art of making art. It's today's What's Up ABQ.
Hey Albuquerque, this is Lindsay.
This is Lorenzo.
And this is What's Up ABQ.
Welcome to the What's Up ABQ podcast. This is Lorenzo. Lindsay is at home taking care of our sick daughter, so she will not be joining us today. But today on the podcast, we have...
Hi, my name is Katie Dukes-Walker, and I am the director of the Arts Leadership and Business Program and the Interdisciplinary Arts Program here at the University of New Mexico. I'm also a singer, a chamber musician, and sing with the trio, Amity Trio.
Wonderful. Thank you. So, yeah, we're here on campus at UNM. You know, it's a wonderful, beautiful spring day, spring break. There's not a whole lot of students here, as I noticed. I had a chance to kind of walk around Popejoy. It's a fantastic building. But yeah, so let's just dive in. I have a couple questions and we can kind of, you know, see where this goes. But so what inspired you to pursue a career in the arts, and how did your journey lead to where you are today as a performer, an educator, an arts administrator?
Well, I think first and foremost, I have my parents to thank for the beginning of my journey. My mother is a visual artist and textile designer, and so I grew up around visual arts and artists my whole life. My father, while he was a teacher his whole career, is very musical and always played the guitar and sung with me as a child. He said to me that his best teaching tool was the fact that he could play guitar, because he could bring everyone in his classroom together, and they often made little musicals and all kinds of fun things to enhance their learning. You know, I think just as a young child, I was always ingrained in the arts just through my parents' love for the arts and their own practice, which led me to going to a lot of concerts and things. I grew up in a town called Bloomington, Indiana, which ironically enough houses one of the best music schools in the entire world, definitely the country, the IU Jacobs School of Music. So, you know, in my backyard, we had a world-class opera, a ballet. We had lots of musical theater that went through IU. And the high school programs in my hometown were really extraordinary as well. So I remember as a middle school student, we got to get on a bus and go see the musical. And I think they were doing Grease. And so I sat in the audience and watched this production, this musical, and I thought, that's what I want to do with my life. I want to be up there on that stage. And so in order to be in that particular choir, it was really an audition-based choir. They were a show choir. They did a lot of things, a lot of competitions and things. So it was expected that you had a voice teacher and had some training. So I started taking piano lessons, and my piano teacher, her husband, was a graduate student at the Jacobs School of Music in opera. And I started taking voice lessons from him, and he just identified with my voice, my stature, my build. If you see me, you see I have a big jaw and I'm tall. I'm, you know, like 5'10", 5'11". Mm-hmm. And he just knew that the type of music that would suit me well is classical music and opera. Mm. So he started teaching me all the classical repertoire and classical technique. Mm. So we started singing, you know, the 25 Italian art songs, and ventured into arias and art songs and all kinds of wonderful things. And, you know, his sort of philosophy was, if you can learn classical technique, you can sing anything. Mm. So then, you know, of course, I made it into the choir, which was my original goal, but he had grander goals for me. Little did I know, you know. My thing was, oh, I just want to be in choir. So I get into the choir, of course, right, you know, and I thought that was the end-all, be-all of the thing, because I was in the, before Glee existed, that's what this choir was. It was a really sort of, like, cool thing to do. So I got into this choir, and did all of these silly, fun musical roles, you know, just character roles and fun things. And that's where I started to get my beginning stage experience and just have so much fun and built a community. And I think the one of the big take-homes and lessons of my entire life is the community that surrounds the arts and the wonderful, beautiful, wonderful, creative people you meet. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just an outlet for my creative expression. It was also a beautiful sense of belonging mm-hmm. with a great group of people. Yeah. So then it came time for me to decide what I wanted to do for college. And as a random side note, I was also an athlete. And so, you know, there was a sort of pull between, do I go in the sports world and continue to be a swimmer, because I was a competitive swimmer, or do I go into the arts and do the music? So my voice teacher handed me this magazine. Actually, I think it was my piano teacher. And it was Opera News, I believe. And there was this very famous soprano on the cover. Her name is Erie Mills. And she had an entire article about her singing philosophy and her teaching philosophy and how she wants to teach young singers to sing with a really healthy, wonderful technique so they can sing for their whole lives. And she's originally from the St. Louis area, Midwestern gal. So I showed my mom this article. She says, we got to go meet this lady. And I said, okay. So we flew to California because she was teaching at San Jose State. I had a lesson with her, and she just, her sentimentality about everything just reminded me of all the Midwestern, you know, women role models I grew up with. She's just, you know, told me like it was really supportive, but had this big, bold, strong personality. And we walked out of that lesson and I thought, this is it. This is the person for me. And, you know, in the arts, one of the other most important things that I tell my students is finding the right mentor, because mentorship is really the key for so many things in your career, in your practice, in your learning. And I just realized immediately that she was the right fit for me. Yeah. And especially as a musician, you're a musician yourself, you know, having that right teacher is the key. Yeah. You can have the grand debate of, okay, is it better to go to a really prestigious institution or are you going there for the teacher? Okay, prestigious institutions have their own strengths, but I would argue any day of the week you go for the person, you go for the teacher. So I moved 3,000 miles away thereabouts, to get out a map, and to California, and I studied in undergrad with my teacher, Erie Mills, and the rest was kind of history. You know, I knew that at that point that was what I wanted to do with my life, and so we worked, and you know, I have an undergraduate degree in vocal performance, and then it came time for grad school, and we were looking at schools, and she said, you know, there's this graduate assistantship available at this school in Colorado. I know the opera director there. You should check this out. And I said, well, I had a little teaching experience with elementary music and some things, you know, but not a whole lot at that point. And I said, well, Erie, I don't really know much about teaching. I was nervous about it. And she handed me a vocal pedagogy book. She goes, read this. And I said, okay, you know, salute her, you know, what Erie says you do. And so I read the book, had a great audition, got the graduate assistantship, which, as we all know, college is expensive. It was less expensive when I went to college, but still expensive. And for the opportunity for me to perform regularly, to have my graduate degree paid for, and to have this teaching opportunity, I saw as a huge value. So I went to the University of Northern Colorado, and within that position, I started teaching voice lessons. And that was my first real collegiate teaching experience. So, you know, I went into it thinking, oh, I'm going to be this opera singer and But then you get into teaching and I just realized how much I loved it. And I loved working with my students. And, you know, there are songs that you sing and there are songs that you hear. And we in the opera world and in the voice world laugh because, oh, how many times are we going to hear this song? But when you teach a student who's never heard that piece before or never had a chance to work on that, you see something from this fresh perspective. It's like my daughter learning something for the first time. You know, my daughter just saw Star Wars for the first time. It was like, It's the same with teaching. Yeah. When you see the twinkle in their eyes and that just like metaphorical mm-hmm. brain explosion, you're like, yeah. wow, this really is magical, even yeah. though this is my 1,000th time hearing this piece, you yeah. know? Yeah. And that it was that aha moment that I think made me realize how important it is mm-hmm. to be a good educator mm-hmm. and maybe want to build those skills yeah. and continue that as a part of my career. So that's how I ended in teaching too. And I think at that point I realized that I really wanted to have a more of a portfolio career mm-hmm. and not just focus on one thing. So as I've progressed, teaching, performing, and you know, being an arts administrator have all played important roles in my career.
Definitely. So being brought up in music, being around music, you had that mentor that kind of pushed you and brought you to the place, and then you had an opportunity to be that person to other people. That's fantastic. So during that whole time period, though, as you're telling your story, I'm wondering, like, was there ever a point in that where maybe you got a little bit discouraged? I mean, you have a lot of natural talent, I'm sure, but how much of it is natural talent versus, like, as a musician, I've experienced this where I've plateaued and I feel like I can't get any better. I don't have the natural talent there. And I play trumpet and there's other, you know, trumpet players. I'm like, oh, they're so awesome. Like, how can I ever do that? I can't do that. How do you get past that?
Oh, yeah. So, oh my gosh, that is a really complicated and wonderful question that I think so many people resonate with. Going back to my teacher, Erie, she said, Katie, you just have to, it's one pond at a time. You start out in the pond in your backyard, and then you end up in the lake in the community, and then after the lake, maybe you'll end up in a great lake, and then after the lake, hopefully you'll be in the ocean. And so, you know, you can think of a long-term plan and trajectory, but you just gotta put one foot in front of the other and just keep going and keep going. I think it's many artists get to a crossroad where they're thinking, okay, I have all of this huge education. I've spent years and years and years practicing my craft, but the market is just so competitive and mm-hmm. so saturated. What am I going to do with my life? You have that sort of existential crisis moment, right, you know? And I had that. I went through my graduate degree. I have a graduate degree in vocal performance. And my husband, who's also a musician, wanted to get his doctorate. Mm-hmm. So ironically enough, he brought me back home because he got his doctorate at Indiana University, Jacobs yeah. School of Music. But Bloomington is a wonderful arts community, but it's very confined to the academy and what's happening at the university. There's not a professional opera company in Bloomington, Indiana. So that was a conundrum for me. That was a struggle. I said, okay, well, we're going to go back. You're going to do this. But what work is there for me there? You know? You know, there were some of my other mentors who were saying, don't do it. Don't go back there. You're going to be in this void and you'll never dig yourself out of it. You know, yeah. what do you do? So, you know, I ended up there and I didn't know exactly what to do. And I ended up, you know, applying for every job I could mm-hmm. try to find. I mean, yeah. just all kinds of things from right. like being a secretary to I actually was a substitute teacher for a while, know, and then it was really interesting. I heard that there was going to be a job as a radio host for the classical radio station in Bloomington, and I got an interview, you know, and so I go in there, and this is a great, like, how can you, like, fail miserably at an interview, like, story, so this thing. I did all my research. I was talking obscure, you know, Tony Plogue trumpet music, animal music. I had all these things in my head. I was, and then they gave me the name of this obscure composer that I never heard of, and I had to pronounce the name and record myself, and I cracked. Like, oh, I couldn't do it. I couldn't say the thing. And so, long story short, I don't think I passed the radio voice test. And I did not get the job. I didn't get it at all. And, but then I thought, okay, this could be just an epic failure and I could feel sorry for myself, you know, dive into imposter syndrome. Or I could grow the courage to call the guy who did not hire me and say, hey, I know you didn't hire me for this job. This wasn't a good fit, but what else is out there?
Yeah.
And do you know of any other jobs? And so I did, and he answered, and we had this great conversation, and he said, well, I'm looking at your resume, you know, you're a performer, you're doing all this. And then I said, yeah, I am. And he said, well, there's this wonderful lady at IU named Kim Carballo. Mm-hmm. She has an education outreach opera program in town, mm-hmm. and she's doing this meet and greet. You should go over and, you know, talk to her. Right. So I showed up to this thing with resume in hand and went to this pizza party. Introduced myself to her. She looked it over and she goes, here's the score. We have rehearsals on Monday for this show that they were doing. And little did I know it was an audition. You know, she wanted to see if I could learn the music and show up.
Yeah.
So I crammed this thing in 3 days over mm-hmm. the weekend, basically memorized the whole thing in 3 days and it mm-hmm. was, and showed up, you know, sang for her. And she's like, okay, rehearsal's in the next room right now. Let's go. So we went in and now, fast forward, I don't know, 10 years more or more later, mm-hmm. Kim is the pianist in my professional chamber music trio.
Oh, wow.
And so we met each other in kind of the most roundabout way. We've traveled all over the world together. We did a program in Southern Italy together. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We've, you know, done conferences. We've just performed in many capacities. And when you find your team, when you mm-hmm. find the right match creatively, mm-hmm. you just know it mm-hmm. and things kind of spiral from there.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's another thing I like to bring home to my students that, you know, even if you feel discouraged right now, mm-hmm. sometimes what feels like a failure mm-hmm. might just be an open window or door to the opportunity that was really meant for you mm-hmm. and a better fit for you. And if I hadn't had the courage to face the failure, then I never would have met the person that is the third in the trio that has brought me the most joy in my life, you know?
Yeah.
So
how wonderful, though, like mm-hmm. as an educator, you have that experience because if you're young and you're a student and you're met with that, you know, failure, it can take the wind out of you. And you know, sadly, I think a lot of young people might let that discourage them away from a path that could have been something. But to have that experience, you know, that's really valuable, I think, to sort of share that with your students, right? So I have another question. So maybe you answered this already, but could you share some insights into your experiences performing internationally and across the United States? And how have these experiences shaped your perspective on classical music and on the arts industry?
Of course, you know, we've traveled all over the United States and abroad quite a bit, and every community is different. And I think the thing that's the take home is the collaboration and going into a community who is so willing to let you be a part of what's going on there. We started this chamber music festival in Southern Italy, and you know, we're trying to strategize of what kind of repertoire we wanted to bring. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, we wanted to make sure that we were, you know, bringing some repertoire that would feel like home to our audience. And we also wanted to challenge them a little bit. So what we kind of ended up doing, which now is in more than not morphing into our mission and ethos with Amity Trio, is to make sure that we're performing in collaboration with our audience and have it be an interactive experience and not us just talking or performing at people.
Right.
You know, people want an experience and they want to feel like they're part of something. Mm-hmm. You know, when we would go to Italy, we would bring some of the classic Italian art songs and mm-hmm. things that are just part of their inherent deep culture. And what would happen is we'd start with that mm-hmm. and the audience would just stand up and start singing with us, you know? And it was this really fun interaction, no matter where we would go. You know, we would do these classic pieces, the Neapolitan songs and all kinds of fun things. And then we'd throw in a newly composed work by a living composer. Mm-hmm. And we'd just kind of see what that was. And so, you know, I think a lot of people think that classical music and even fine art is a little, at times, not very accessible.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a way to make new things accessible if you can do it in a way that's digestible and fun and interactive and as a dialogue and not stuffy or overly, I would say, negatively intellectual, you know?
Right.
And so what we found through that process is that our audience members loved the traditional tried and true, you know, anthems of their culture just as much as they ended up liking the new music. And it fostered all these wonderful conversations about what new music is. We would often bring the composers with us so that the living composers could actually speak about and to their pieces and answer questions from the audience. So starting that dialogue. And now with Amity Trio, we do the same thing. We commission new works by living composers, and we premiere those works together. And, you know, often with our composers in a residence with us and in collaboration with us, and even a lot of times performing along with us. So,
and did I read this correctly on the website? So the mission emphasizes new music as a vehicle for amplifying historically excluded voices. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, of course. You know, so through my education in classical Western art music, right, we know that the traditional canon is mainly comprised of old dead white guys. You know, and we study those pieces, and those pieces are works of art, and there are many wonderful things to learn, and we should continue to perform those things. But it also contains a lot of complicated subjects and subject matters. And so I think as classical musicians right now, we're trying to learn and figure out how to negotiate those scenarios, right? There's lots of debate in this. Do we do away with some of this repertoire? Do we not perform it anymore? Can we recontextualize it and use it as a learning moment? Can we add an educational element to what we're doing? Can we reinvent these works to speak more towards a current audience and current times? There are lots of different ideas and lots of different things, but I think one of the things that we absolutely know for sure is that historically, the folks that we're seeing on stages and the folks that we're supporting making music, they're not representative equitably across different cultures. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of our main goals, is to find living new music composers and, you know, premiere their works. Our first album is all comprised of music written by women composers. And our next opera that we're working on is called Oliverso, and it explores the dynamic systems of what it means to have borders. Mm-hmm. And that piece is written by a Mexican composer named Nur Slim. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's been really wonderful. And again, a collaborative artistic practice.
Mm. Well, great. So we're about halfway. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
UNM Arts Leadership and Business presents its annual Arts Career Fair, Thursday, March 21st from 1 to 3 at the UNM College of Fine Arts Lobby at Popejoy Hall. This is an event that provides New Mexico arts organizations, UNM students, UNM faculty, arts professionals, and departments in the College of Fine Arts with community support, networking opportunities, internship connections, and continued educational opportunities. Visit the booths and meet the artists and art organizations that make our city an artist's haven. UNM's Arts Career Fair, Thursday, March 21st from 1 to 3 at Popejoy Hall.
Okay, and we're back. So, moving on, I think the direction for the second half, I'd like to take it into the area where in your job here at UNM. So from the website, and correct me if any of this is wrong, you're a faculty member at UNM, University of New Mexico, teach courses on business planning for the arts, financial management for artists, and nonprofit arts administration. Is that right? And what are some key insights or skills you aim to impact on your students in these courses?
Absolutely. I think, you know, my students come in and they have all the creative ideas in the world, and they're magnificent. They have life-changing ideas, things that where they really want to, from a fundamental level, use their art to serve the world and better the world. And that's really inspiring, actually, because, you know, you think, oh, well, you know, they don't have small ideas. They have huge, big, wonderful ideas. So my students already come in with all the creativity, and they're working with their primary instructor, you know, their trumpet professor, mm-hmm. hypothetically their painting professor, and so on and so forth, to build those creative skills. So my job is to help them take their ideas mm-hmm. and help them turn those into fruition. Mm-hmm. And often in, you know, a classical arts curriculum, we leave out the business savvy and the entrepreneurial stuff that is really essential for artists to thrive, especially as freelance artists, right? We have to know how to pay our taxes. We have to understand infinite things about copyright. Yeah. I mean, yeah, just the copyright stuff for musicians alone is so complicated, we could go down a rabbit hole, right? how to build a budget, how to stick to a budget. You know, those skills can make or break whether you can continue to make your art, period. Mm-hmm. And so I see my job as to help, you know, they already have this wonderful, beautiful cake, and I help put the sprinkles on top of the cake. You know, I help them learn those extra skills so that they can feel financially secure in what they're doing and continue to make the wonderful art that they come here to make every single day. So in financial management for the arts, a course that I've taught, we learn how to build budgets. You know, we learn about financial statements. We learn about loans. We learn about fundraising. We learn how they can, the basics of grant writing and how that process works, how to write contracts, what kinds of things you'd want to put in a contract. And just so that they have all these tools and these templates so that when they leave and they are faced with this moment where they're working in collaboration with other people, they have all the skills that they need to make those projects really thrive.
Yeah. And, you know, I can kind of speak to an example that I've noticed that this would be useful. So my wife, Lindsay, the co-host of this podcast, she's extremely creative. But when it comes to like marketing the stuff and doing the books and the numbers, she's like, I just want to be creative. Like, can you do this part for me? And I'm like, yeah, I'll do that. So that's very valuable for a creative person, I think. Is this something that's unique to UNM, or is this sort of, is this happen in fine arts colleges across the country?
You know, I think it's becoming a more popular thing. Way back when, again, you know, I was sort of introduced to this entrepreneurial spirit through some of my colleagues and connections at Indiana University. And that was really the first time that I had heard a lot about this. There was a wonderful book written in the music realm called The Savvy Music Teacher, The Savvy Musician, I believe, by David Cutler. And it was such a phenomenal book because it spoke to all of this, how to be an artist and a performer from a music perspective, but also how to ingrain these entrepreneurial ideas to help your career thrive. And fast forward, I met David and we had these great conversations. And then he actually ended up interviewing me for his second book, The Savvy Music Teacher, because when I was in Bloomington, I also ran a music for-profit business. And so, you know, I think that there have been people who have been bringing home this philosophy and these ideas for a while. I think the challenge in the academy is that our curriculum is so packed already that the questions that we keep asking ourselves is, where do we have room? We can't keep adding more credits to students' curriculum, you know. So what we've done here at UNM is really, I think, brilliant, not to toot our own horn here, but we offer the Arts Leadership and Business program as a minor program, not a major. So any student with any major across the entire university can minor in arts leadership and business. That is so wonderful for so many reasons. It's an extra. It's a wonderful extra. And that allows us to have students across every arts discipline and outside of the College of Fine Arts too. Sometimes we might have a business student who wants to specialize more in the business of art and can come here and practice and learn those specific skills. And like you said, social media arts marketing is a big, huge thing. One of my other mentors told me one time, if you don't have a website in this day and age, you don't exist. And he was right. I'll give him credit, Jeff Nelson, thank you. And you know, he wasn't saying that to scare me. He was just saying that we live in a digital age. And if you don't have these materials up to date and at a professional level, then no one can find you, you know? Yeah. And you want to be, you want to make it as easy as possible for someone to give you a job. Exactly. And if they can't find you, it's over because the attention span is gone and they're going to move on to the next person. So make sure you have your professional portfolio materials together. Website, a million ways that a person can find you, call you, contact you. And, you know, then that just helps you be one step closer to be given that job opportunity. And, you know, our social media arts marketing course through the minor program is one of the most popular courses. It fills up every single semester because students know the value of that class. And, you know, a lot of our students are freelance artists. So it's their job and their responsibility to promote themselves as freelance artists, and they want the cutting edge skills and information on how to do that.
Right. So going back a little bit to your journey, so you began life in Indiana, the Hoosier State, and found your way to California, to Colorado, back to Indiana. Was Albuquerque the next step after that?
It was indeed. So this is there's a common theme in my life and my husband's life that we go for it, you know? And it's like, what is that sort of cliche saying? You never get the shot that you don't take or whatever, right, or whatever it is.
I think it was Yogi Berra, maybe? I don't know. He has a whole, anyways, yeah.
Anyway, I didn't say it right, but y'all will know what I'm talking about. Yeah. And so we just always said, well, why not? You know, so what's the worst that can happen? We're in the same place we were before. So my husband wasn't even out of his doctorate at IU and then got a tip or someone told him that their job here at UNM was open. Mm-hmm. And he thought, well, I don't even have my dissertation in hand, but why not? Yeah. So it was a 1-year position, and he applied. We were actually in Italy doing the program in Southern Italy together. And he was there and I was here, but I remember calling my colleagues and saying, make sure that his shirt and his suit aren't wrinkly. Iron it before he gets on the Zoom interview. He sent his stuff and he actually got an interview. Wow. And so, okay. So he makes it through that first round and then he has to come here and do the whole recital and the in-person interview, the whole thing. And he flies from Italy straight to Albuquerque, does his whole recital, does the whole thing. And then fast forward, he ends up getting the 1-year job, and our jaws just dropped to the floor. Wow, like, what? So we just packed up all of our stuff and we moved to Albuquerque. Never been to New Mexico in our lives, coming from Indiana, very different. He had to finish his dissertation and he flew back from Indiana to here. It felt like a million times to finish all of his exams and all of that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. But we fell in love with it. Mm-hmm. He ended up applying for the job again because it was just a temporary position. He got the job again. And, we've been here now, I think, for 9 or 10 years. Yeah. And we love it. It is the land of enchantment. And I don't know. We love it here.
Right. So when you heard Albuquerque in New Mexico and like, I'm going to be living there, did you have an idea of what this place is like? Because I'm a native, but I encounter people from all over the place. And a lot of times they're like, this is not what I expected. Was that kind of your thought too? Or did you kind of have a better idea of like what this place is like?
I didn't really know anything, but I love traveling. I love being a part of just any community. And, I knew that there was a thriving arts community here. Of course, I had heard of Santa Fe Opera. And so I was just excited to be in a new place and start our careers and be a part of the arts community in any way we could.
Yeah. All right. So next question. How has the local arts community influenced your work here since you've been here and your vision for your future in creative arts here in Albuquerque?
Yeah, there are so many wonderful artists and arts organizations in our community, and I feel very privileged and lucky to get to work with them a lot. We, as a part of our program with Arts Leadership and Business Program, we have an Arts Career Fair, which is coming up. It's going to be March 21st in the Pope Joy Lobby, the College of Fine Arts Lobby. Most people will know it as Pope Joy Lobby. And we invite arts organizations around the entire community. They set up booths, and it's a time for students, faculty, community members, everyone to get to know what's going on in the arts in Albuquerque. Students bring their resumes, pitch themselves for internship opportunities, job opportunities. We have a resume feedback advice table where different professors from the College of Fine Arts sit and volunteer their time to give feedback to students on their professional materials, resume, CV. And it's just a really wonderful time of togetherness. It's a time to learn about the programming and all the arts organizations in town. It's a great time to, brainstorm with each other and be inspired by what everyone is doing in town. I'm just in this lucky position where I get to work with and learn about all these different organizations and what everyone is doing. We also have a wonderful internship program through the Arts Leadership and Business Program. It is, essentially the kind of capstone to the entire minor program. And at the very end of the minor degree, students go out and they have a practical in-person internship with an arts organization. It's in arts management. And through that program and coordinating all of that and pairing students with organizations, you know, we want it to be a mutually beneficial experience where arts organizations are getting the kind of support that they need from the student intern. And also the student is getting the type of work experience that in many cases, the very beginning work experience. And so we work really hard to pair and find the right matches for students and for organizations. And through that, I've just got to meet so many wonderful people and all these thriving organizations and artists in town. So as I've been building bridges and building collaborations with people, they're very innovative and inspiring. So it's great to hear their stories about how they want to take what they're doing to the next level. And that just makes, you know, my brain spin too about these things. And then from our perspective here is how can we further support arts organizations in our community and help them with whatever needs they might have. As an example, we know that the arts is unfortunately very, very under-supported financially, you know, and nonprofits, unfortunately, not all of them succeed. Some of them, you know, have to, you know, go under. And so arts leaders in our community are always trying to think, how can we better support, you know, arts organizations? How can we, what does that mean even? So for us here, sometimes we can provide free interns. Also, we can use some of the mechanisms at the university to do off-campus work study situations, which essentially subsidizes so that students get paid for their work, because artists should always get paid for their work. And at the same time, create a mutually beneficial experience so that arts organizations actually have a bit of a discount for the payment that they have to pay. So everybody wins, right? And that's one way that I think, you know, we can also help our community and arts organizations get these highly skilled, you know, professionals, young professionals. And also it's not going to break their bank, you know, because hiring folks for these additional administrative roles can be quite costly.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, my observation is every thriving community has a thriving arts community. So I think that's fantastic that you're putting that back into the community here. So the encouragement of arts with our young people, I think, is so important. You were talking about your early life with, you know, your parents being artists and musicians, and not everybody has an artist or musician parent. But a lot of times folks, kids will get that first experience with an instrument in an APS classroom. I think that's so, so important. Is there any sort of impact that UNM has, any sort of partnership or communication with APS and UNM, or is there any connection, I guess?
Yeah. Oh, so many. Mm-hmm. Well, first of all, we send a lot of educators out into our community in so many different capacities. You know, I'm part of the Arts Leadership and Business Program, so I don't want to speak for the Department of Music right now, but I know that the music ed department here at UNM is world class, and they, you know, bring in local students to UNM from Albuquerque, give them this wonderful education, and then send them back out into the community to teach, you know, music in our community. And so, again, I see all of these folks when I go do recruiting events, and they send students my way, and we have these conversations. And so it's really great to see our alumni really thriving in our community and doing just an incredible amount of work. I mean, you know, to work in the public school system and is no small feat, and our teachers just deserve all of our respect.
Yeah.
But that's not just in music. I mean, you know, we have art education students, and we also have a lot of education outreach programs that we're in collaboration with. The University of New Mexico Music Prep School is an outstanding program. You know, they bring people in from all over our community, do programming for our community. And, you know, I've worked with them a lot. I used to teach for that program as well when I first moved here. So there are so many different efforts, you know, at UNM and across our community to engage in education enrichment, you know. And I think the difference between enrichment and engagement is, again, what I was talking about before, where you're not just going into a community and performing at a bunch of people, right? You're creating a lasting staying power in a community in service of someone else's needs.
Right.
So, you know, we do that here at UNM in countless ways, and I do that with my trio, Amity Trio. We go and we perform all over, but we also pair what we do with a curriculum guide for students. So we send that curriculum guide to the teachers, and they are able to prepare the students in advance, teach them the songs. They have all kinds of different activities that go along with the music. Mm-hmm. And then oftentimes what they prepare them with is a piece that we'll perform and sing together during the performance. And then we do the performance and we sing and make music together. And then we leave. And then there are follow-up exercises and games and play and all these kinds of wonderful things. I've taught students that range from kindergarten, every age group of student you can imagine. But I really love the young elementary school kids. And, you know, my sort of music educator philosophy is that of Mr. Rogers, and what Mr. Rogers always says is that play is the work of a child. Mm-hmm. And so within our curriculum guides, we try to build in as much movement and play as possible. Mm-hmm. Again, because how boring is it to sit in an audience and be told you're not allowed to make any noise, right, and you can't open that lozenge because you're going to bother someone. You know, I think we have this sort of sterile, really stereotypical way we think we have to digest, mm-hmm, and like eating our vegetables, classical music. Right. And it doesn't have to be that way, right, you know? Right. The composers that we commission and work with, they try to create and write music that, like I said, is collaborative in nature, mm-hmm, and playful in nature, mm-hmm, so that the audience becomes a part of it instead, mm-hmm, of just being performed at, you right. know?
An interactive experience for sure. Yeah. That's, yeah. All right. So as we begin to wrap, so you had mentioned the Arts Career Fair. I want to amplify any other activities, any sort of events. If you want to talk more details about the Arts Career Fest, I'm looking at your posters here. It's an Arts Splash. Is that something as well?
Well, yeah. So Arts Splash is actually an incredible event that is hosted and run by the College of Fine Arts, mm-hmm, here. So everyone, all of my colleagues here. And it's every fall. So that would be absolutely something to keep your eye on for, fall 2024. We all gather together, all the departments, with our performances. We take over this walkway out here in front of Pope Joy Hall. It's outside. There are food trucks. There are all kinds of fun things that happen that day. And that, again, is another celebration of the arts in our community. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, definitely keep an eye out for that. It's every year. So we'll have another one in 2024. Mm-hmm. And Arts Career Fair for Arts Leadership and Business is every single semester, mm-hmm, and anyone is welcome. So come out to that, mingle with arts organizations and folks around, and to learn more about what we're doing here with the Arts Leadership and Business program, you can follow us on social media at UNM_ALBS or on Facebook at University of New Mexico Arts Leadership and Business. And we post about, we have guest lectures that come to the College of Fine Arts. We host all kinds of fun things, and you can keep up to date on that by following us.
Definitely. And we'll be sure to link all of the socials, all of the events on our social media, and make sure to shout that out for you guys. Last question. And we're going to kind of take a New Mexican turn. So it's not required that you like either, but red or green?
Christmas. Christmas is the correct answer.
Yes.
But red with carne adobada. I mean, I put an asterisk, but yeah. Oh, I love all of the chili all the time.
Yes.
It's addicting, honestly.
100%. Yes.
And when I leave, like when I go back to Indiana, uh-huh, then my stamina, or whatever you want to call it, yeah, like goes down, and yeah, I come back and I have to build it back up again. You know, it's like, right, oh, I'm a wimp. I leave and I go back to my Midwestern diet, and then right, I come here and I'm like, I gotta just on the side for a few days, you know?
Right. Yeah. So I had some friends ask about the red chili in Thanksgiving. So they're like, so what's it with the red chili on Thanksgiving? Like, what are you supposed to do with it? I'm like, well, you put it on your mashed potatoes. And then it's just like, that's so weird. I'm like, but no, you got to try it.
Oh, red chili on turkey, one of the best things. Put it on everything.
Yes.
It goes well with that, literally everything.
Yeah, 100%. So definitely appreciate your time. I think the College of Fine Arts, y'all are doing fantastic things here on campus, impacting lives, but appreciate your time spending here.
Thank you so much for having me. It was so great to meet you today. Yeah.
Merch, short for merchandise. You see it, you need it, you want to show it off. Especially if it's showing off your New Mexico pride, right? Well, the What's Up ABQ store has it, and it's ready to put on any space, any face, or any surface. Just slip over to whatsupabq.com and click the merch tab above the podcast player. There you'll discover all the accessories, stickers, clothing, and drinkware with a New Mexico flair that you can ever want. Come on, you don't need that new toothbrush anyway, do you? Pick up some merch now at whatsupabq.com. Thanks for listening to What's Up ABQ, the podcast dedicated to the lovers and livelihoods of the Duke City. Now in our seventh season, we bring you the voices of the people in Albuquerque that make this place a great place to live. If you have someone or something that we should know about and feature in an upcoming episode, drop us a line on our website, whatsupabq.com. And please consider leaving us a review on your favorite podcast platform. Thanks for checking in, and don't miss the next episode of What's Up ABQ.